Let's bring in our virologist, Dr. Angela Rasmussen, who now works with Georgetown University. Good morning, Angie.
Good morning, Ursula. How are you today?
Good. Even though this news is just so tough to swallow, I'm seeing now that the U.S. positivity rate for COVID has topped 10% for the first time since May. We're averaging 150,000 cases a day. You have been warning us about being prepared for this surge in the fall and winter, and here we are. You also know of the governor's additional restrictions that go into effect today. Do you think they will be enough to slow the spread?
Well, I really hope that they are, because right now we are just in a very, very grim situation nationwide, not just here in Washington State. But I really do hope that people will not only abide by what the governor has recommended, but that they will really be thinking to themselves about how to keep themselves and their families safe going into the holiday season. I think that, you know, it's very difficult to enforce some of these things in terms of the way that people are behaving in their individual lives. And I just really like to stress to people that, you know, it's really unfortunate that we are at this juncture. We really didn't have to be. If we had done nationally a number of things earlier in the pandemic, increasing testing capacity, encouraging some of the non-pharmaceutical interventions that are meant to reduce risk, but we didn't. And so here we are. So I just really hope that people will be thinking first and foremost of their own safety and the safety of those that they love and the people in their communities.
Dr. Rasmussen, I'm going to take this time to ask you questions that our listeners have. I feel like I can ask you questions anytime I want to, but this is an opportunity for our listeners to ask you. Oh, happy birthday. Is your birthday today?
Yes, it is my birthday today.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Okay, so here we go. Here's a question from the 206. How concerned should I be about contracting the virus while pregnant? Do we know if it can affect the baby?
So that's a very good question, and that's an area that's under it's a very active area of research right now. I don't think that there is any indication that it could affect the baby. But there are some indications that COVID can be very harmful for pregnant women, for the mother. So I think that, you know, anybody who's pregnant or considering getting pregnant should be very, very careful about making sure that they really reduce their exposure risk as much as possible.
360 asks, we've heard a lot of news about the efficacy of the new vaccines and minimal news about the safety of them. This person is an RN, and family and friends like to talk to me about medical decisions. I know that can't be given without efficiency and safety, but I'd love to have more, some talking points about the safety.
Oh, I completely agree with that. And this is, you know, one of the issues of releasing data by press release rather than publishing it in a reputable medical journal. You really can't review all of that data, and you can't see, you know, any information besides what is being released by the vaccine manufacturer for the data safety monitoring board that is running the trial. But so far for both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, what has been reported is that the vaccines are meeting an acceptable safety profile. What that actually means will depend on, you know, the full data package that ends up getting submitted to the FDA for consideration for approval. But so far, anyways, there haven't been any major adverse events that would indicate that these vaccines are not safe. That said, though, these trials are not over. These were both interim data analyses that were released over the past 2 weeks, and they do need to continue these trials to continue collecting that safety data because it is really critical.
The head of the Washington Restaurant Association is predicting that tens of thousands, maybe even up to 100,000 workers will end up losing their jobs, and many restaurants will go under because of these latest restrictions shutting down indoor dining. And he says that the data is in that restaurants are not places where COVID spreads. Is that accurate?
I don't think that's accurate about restaurants not being places that COVID spreads. We know very well that in certain circumstances, including in restaurants, they are very fertile grounds for COVID to spread. So I don't think that that is a true statement at all. I do think it's probably true that a lot of restaurants will be going out of business and a lot of people will be losing their jobs. And that is really a tough pill for everybody to swallow, given how much that affects our economy.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, it's really, really unfortunate that we haven't had more federal leadership. What we really need to support these workers, to support these business owners, is a really comprehensive financial aid package from the federal government to make sure that these restaurants can stay in business when they have to close. It's really a disservice to the American people and to these small business owners and to these employees that that hasn't gone through Congress.
So despite COVID running rampant throughout our area and across the country, there is one county health director, and Angie, I'm not sure if you're familiar with what he has said. It's out of Snohomish County, the health director there, Dr. Spitters, Chris Spitters, and he says this: as first graders are returning to the Monroe School District today for in-person classes, he says that schools aren't locations where COVID is spreading, and I want you to actually hear him speak.
Current countermeasures in place in K-12 schools in Snohomish County and elsewhere appear to be working to prevent transmission in those settings. And two, the Washington State Department of Health continues to support the gradual phasing in of cohorted hybrid in-person learning for young students and children with special needs, even in the current environment of high transmission in the community. In-person schooling for these targeted groups in appropriately managed settings does not pose a community disease control hazard.
Your thoughts?
So I think that's very reasonable. The real X factor here is how that community transmission and that community prevalence is going to affect the schools. I think that it's a really smart to close down restaurants and bars and things like that, gyms, if you want to have in-person schooling. But at some point, you know, the case numbers will go up to the point that we won't be able to keep it out of schools. And we still know that even though they're not as high risk in terms of developing severe COVID, kids can get infected with SARS coronavirus 2, and they can spread it, including within their households, to people who may be more vulnerable. So this needs to be watched very, very carefully. I don't think that we can say across the board that schools are not places that COVID spreads, because there are some schools in which outbreaks have happened. I think that this is something where we really need to be constantly evaluating the balance between the need for in-person schooling as well as trying to protect the larger community.
Dr. Rasmussen got a text from the 206. They say, I'm a police officer on the east side. My department has always pushed mask wearing in public, but only recently have they got strict in the building. I avoid everyone and have the luxury of having my own office. Patrol officers share workspace. I have yet to see that space cleaned even once, with the exception of when a few officers were positive for COVID. I feel like wearing paper masks and washing hands isn't enough without cleaning. What do you think?
So there's some mixed data about this. It's thought that surface disinfection is not as important as other measures such as distancing and wearing masks, but that doesn't mean it's not important at all. I do think that it is important to disinfect high-touch, commonly touched surfaces, because fomite transmission or transmission from contaminated surfaces can occur, and there are now several case reports of that happening. But it's, you know, that should not be the only measure that's taken. People should definitely be wearing masks. They should also be distancing. And in that workspace, in any workspace that's indoors, they also should be considering ventilation and potentially air purification as well.
360 asks, are there doses or degrees of COVID that determine how sick one gets from the virus? We know people who have recovered within just a few days and some that haven't. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so that's a great question and one that actually is somewhat debated. And I have personally written a letter to the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine that was published a few weeks ago, arguing that we don't actually have evidence that dose is linked to symptom severity. So in animal models, there really isn't a good correlation of dose with disease severity. So right now we don't really know in people, but we also don't know what the minimum infectious dose is or the amount of virus you have to be exposed to become infected at all. And my guess would be that it's a combination both of dose as well as your own predisposition to developing severe disease. Certainly, we know that there are risk factors inherent to some people, medical conditions, comorbidities, and age that can predispose people to higher disease severity anyways. So I would imagine that it's probably not a straightforward answer that if you get a lot of virus, you're going to get really sick. If you don't, you're not. I think it's probably a combination of that as well as all those other pre-existing factors that I mentioned.
Dr. Rasmussen, so a lot of parents are going to be like me. We are expecting our college-age students to come home for Thanksgiving holidays. And in the case of, I'm going to tell you about what my son is doing. I want to find out if this is even helpful, which he is self-quarantining. So he knows to try to self-quarantine for the next 2 weeks. But then he gets on a plane. But before he leaves Colorado, he is going to actually get a COVID test. Is that a moot point? Because he gets on a plane after the COVID test?
I don't think it's a moot point. I think it's important to get tested, but he really should consider getting tested a few days after he gets in. And now a study recently out of Yale has shown and been validated that if you can test negative 7 days after starting quarantine, you can end your quarantine early.
Oh, wow.
Now, that's not official guidelines, but I would recommend that anybody who is not able to do a full 14-day quarantine and is thinking about using testing in this way to consider getting a test after 7 days and using that to base your decision on when you will leave quarantine. And I should say that also, so we also have a college-age son who is coming back for Thanksgiving. And I'm going to recommend the same thing, really, that he gets tested a week after returning from California. I think that is a reasonable solution for people who can't do the full 14-day quarantine.
I got one other question just about masks because it still comes up. What's better, one of the cloth masks that I have purchased or have created, or those paper masks that you get, that are the disposable ones? What is more protective?
So that really depends a lot. It depends on the type of cloth that is a cloth mask is made out of. It depends on how well they fit. It depends on how many layers there are in the mask. So it's really difficult to answer that question in a straightforward way. Kind of what I've been guiding people is that any mask is good, and any mask will reduce exposure. Masks mainly work as source control, so they protect people around you by preventing you from spreading respiratory droplets when you breathe or speak. So any mask will do that to a certain degree. Some do better than others. But the important thing to remember is that you should not only be wearing a mask, you should be thinking also about social distancing, about ventilation, about controlling the amount of time that you are around other people outside your household. With those other risk exposure reduction methods in practice, you're really reducing your risk even more than you would just by wearing a mask. So masks aren't the only thing, even though they're still an important part of our strategy to control transmission in the community.
Dr. Rasmussen got some more listener questions. 253 ask. Curious if the vaccine is a live virus, my daughter can't get them due to a suppressed immune system.
Yeah, so that's a great question. Right now, the leading candidates that are in phase 3 trials are not live attenuated vaccines. Two of them, the AstraZeneca vaccine and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, are what are called viral vector vaccines, meaning that they use a different virus called an adenovirus that causes the common cold to deliver the target for the immune system from SARS coronavirus 2. So these are viruses, but they're replication incompetent. They can't really reproduce the way a normal adenovirus would. So that's really going to be a question for the daughter and her physician to decide if that's safe. But the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines that we heard about just this week and last week our mRNA vaccines, they don't have any virus in them. They're a piece of genetic material that encodes the protein that the immune system is targeting for COVID. So those are not any kind of viral infection at all. Those should be safe for immunosuppressed people. And I believe that HIV-positive people were included in those clinical trials to make sure that they were assessing vaccine safety and efficacy in an immunocompromised population.
Happy birthday, doctor. We appreciate
you.
We really appreciate you coming on. I mean, 8 months we've been doing this. Every single week you've been coming on, and your information has been invaluable to our show, to us personally. And we just wish you all the best, and a big happy birthday to you.
We are so fortunate. Thank you so much, Dr. Rasmussen. And also thank you to our listeners. Great questions. And we are so
Absolutely.
Lucky to have you answer them. Thank you.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to come back anytime. And now that I've changed to be a non-resident affiliate of the Georgetown Center for Global Health Science and Security, I'm going to be in Seattle indefinitely. So I'm always happy to come back.
Hey, good news. And so I got more questions, but we'll wait till next week, next Tuesday, buddy. Tell Taz hello.
Will do. He says hi right back.
All right.
Enjoy your day.
That is Dr. Angela Rasmussen. And again, Ursula, for 8 months, she's been coming on with us. We are really lucky to have her.
So lucky.
Hey, coming up next.